I think listening and learning is a good tie into tip number five. This is understand what makes your community meaningful. And I think this varies. So I think there's some things that are universal. So like truthfulness, integrity, yep. openness, you know, things like that. But I think also that in a church environment, pastors need to really kind of be a student of their body and understand what are people in your congregation viewing as meaningful community. Is it, you know, maybe it's like a love language conversation. Is it quality time? Is it gifts? Is it, you know, what is it?
It's good.
But obviously, when you understand that, you can kind of fold that into your online interactions.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Runyon. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Nils. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and you just got back from Facebook. And when I say Facebook, I don't mean just Facebook at Palo Alto. You actually went to Facebook in California and Facebook's office in Texas, in Austin, Texas. And so you are, you've been spending a lot of time with the Facebook team. And I thought it would be valuable for our audience to get an insight, because it's not, most people don't have that opportunity to go to Facebook and really have inside conversations with Facebook. So I'm eager to hear what you learned, what you experienced. So on this podcast, you have a list that we're going to walk through of the 20 things that you learned from your experience at Facebook. So let's jump into those.
Let's do it. Yeah. And I recognize, so people were hitting me in private messages and stuff all week in Instagram and things, because I'm posting pictures. They're like, I want to live your life. And I'm like, no, you don't. But no, it's a cool opportunity. And I got to give a shout out here at the beginning to Matt Brown, a good friend of ours, who invited us out for Best of SMS, which is this event that, you know, he's put on the last few years. And Christians, social media managers, we got a chance to kind of speak to that group. We've participated in it the last several years, which has been a blessing. But also Nona Jones from Facebook, who's been on the podcast before. Nona's awesome. We continue to kind of stay in touch, and the Lord is doing some amazing things through her, professionally and personally. And also our good friend Christy Childers at Facebook, who runs the Christians at Employee group. Just those two women in particular have been amazing, helping us to kind of stay connected. And there's a great dialogue going back and forth between our teams. So
it's awesome. It's awesome. And Nick, and you and I are friends, and we talk a lot off the podcast. And just I think and you're humble in the opportunities that God opens up to you, but I'm so grateful that you, I think that you have these opportunities and how you're stewarding those opportunities to serve the church as a whole, and not just helping your organization, but really selflessly saying, how can we come alongside and serve the kingdom and all churches and ministries collectively through those relationships that have been formed. And so it's so thrilling, and I can't wait. I can't wait to hear your list of 20. And so let's jump into what you learned in your time there.
Yeah, let's do it. So the top 20, let's see, number one. So these are things that just we picked up in conversations or whatever. Some of them, I'll say at the beginning, might be kind of obvious, but I think it's interesting to where Facebook is saying, hey, this is important. Even if I think it's obvious, it kind of rises to the top for me, because we're always looking for, you know, an edge. So number one, Nona gave a great presentation on social ministry. So we all know social media, but social ministry. So several of these are some just wisdom that she dropped on us. But specifically as it relates to church, this idea of shift the paradigm from church as building to church as community. And, you know, I have been a huge fan of Facebook groups. I think Facebook groups is where this happens. Yep. That community, the 6.5 days a week where your people aren't in your church building, is happening on Facebook anyway. Make it happen in Facebook groups.
Yep. Love it. Love it.
I think, you know, along with that, number two, social ministry is about heart. Mm-hmm. And man, the heart behind what we say, what we do, I think is just so important. So here's a few stats that I think support this idea. 65% of churches are declining. About half of your church congregation is giving online. Everybody's online. These things start to intersect in this online community aspect. It's got to be about the heart of your church. So I'd say that's like tip number two, is let that heart shine forward. You good? Number three?
I got a question. I got to pry a little bit here, Nick. So the tension that, and we had this conversation with Nona as well, in that interview. So I would encourage everyone, if you haven't listened to that interview with Nona and Bishop Walker, incredible conversation. But the tension I hear from a lot of church leaders is, if we're about community, doesn't community happen better face-to-face? And isn't Facebook encouraging people to skip church and using Facebook Live or doing more on Facebook than being in real community? How do you manage that tension, or is it even part of it, the conversation?
So I think another future podcast guest might be my friend Ozzy Dave from North Point.
Yep.
You know Dave?
Yeah. He's been on the podcast before.
Okay, well, that predates me.
Prior to Nick Runyon.
But he was out there in Menlo Park with me, and we had this interesting conversation in the hallway. He's like, we're encouraging people not to go to church. And obviously, like, there's some shock factor. What? But he's like, community is happening in small groups. And what they're doing is they're exploring ways to resource making church happen outside of their own building. And lots to unpack there. But I think I would take that data point or that idea, and I would couple it with what you've heard me say before, which is online and offline are no longer distinct.
Yes.
These two worlds do not exist in an exclusive manner. Like, my online life is the same as my offline life, and the relationships there move fluidly between the two.
Yep.
Community's community. And it's about the heart. You know, it's make social ministry your heart. So it's a communication channel that carries the relationship.
Yeah. So good. It's so good. It's challenging because never before in history did that aspect of relationship exist. And so it is a huge shift for us to make culturally, and a huge shift. Never before in history of the church did this happen. Now, we had new communication channels, but I would say social media is more than a communication channel. It's really an interaction platform. And it's different than even different than like a telephone in the manner of interaction community that is formed through it and the innovation that came through telephones. And so it really is just, it's so new. I don't think it can even be seen as just another new innovation. It is a new way that people are doing community and sharing life. And that's very significant.
I would stay tuned for tips 13 through 20 because we're going to get into that a little
bit. Nice.
But number three, really, I think is a tie into this idea of community. So I think every pastor listening is going to have had an experience, if you've been in any church leadership role for any significant amount of time, people leave the church because they can't connect. So tip number three is bring connection to where they already are. This is the internet. That's a little bit of a restatement of the idea, but I think really, you know, Nona in particular is working with a lot of churches and helping them use social media and use Facebook very well. And this is a huge point that I don't think can be overstated. If people are living there, if online and offline are blended, we have to think about how do we bring connection day in and day out where people are. Which means we as church leaders have to do that connecting. You know, it's time to get in the game.
Interesting. And I'm kind of feeling this trend already of the shift in how we even understand community and how we believe community happens and is happening, and how, at the end of the day, how it's happening and how we align to that shift and how community is being formed and developed today.
So tip number four, I think, is the flip side of this. There is a benefit. It's not just you pouring out. Tip number four is community engagement online gives you visibility into your church congregation. She shared some really good examples with this, but we've also seen this with our work with CV Outreach. So we identified that people were asking marriage questions. And what we saw, and some of the pastors that we were working with were quick to call this out, like the people that are asking questions and help, asking for help in their marriage, they were attending other churches, which is, that was a kind of an interesting view.
Yep.
And it came down to this issue of like, there was shame involved in asking for like marriage counseling, or maybe my community is too small and close and I didn't want to raise that. The outworking, so the takeaway, the application then was pastors started saying, wait a second, I'm going to talk about this publicly from the pulpit and about how, you know, marriage counseling is part of a healthy marriage and it's an ongoing kind of maintenance thing, not a crisis thing. But if you're in crisis, like, you got to get help. And so as you start talking about this from the pulpit, what our pastors began to see was that people were being more proactive about kind of raising their hand and saying, hey, I really need, you know, to tap into this resource that my church is offering. That conversation from the pulpit wouldn't have started had they not looked at the data. And I think that that's the same thing that happens when pastors and church leaders get involved in these like Facebook groups, day in and day out throughout the course of the week. And when you're in your community, you're going to start to understand, get visibility into it.
I feel like a lot of pastors, and they say the average church member is going to church about twice a month now, the average active church member. And so the consistency of attendance is dropping in churches. And I feel like pastors will often say that they don't, because they cannot see those people that are watching online or doing different things, they don't have a pulse on their congregation like they can when they're in the room with them. And the reality is that is true. There's nothing like what you're seeing real-time interactions with what people are doing and how they're responding to a sermon. But I think on the flip side of that, now you have interactions of the other 100 plus hours in the week that they're interacting online. You know, I said they're not obviously online 100 plus hours, but you can integrate and find out the pulse of your congregation in a more significant way than you ever could before in history. So it's different, but man, when you pay attention and you spend more time listening on social media or on Facebook specifically, it's huge. So yeah, man, that's great.
For sure. And I think listening and learning is a good tie into tip number five. This is understand what makes your community meaningful. Mm. And I think this varies. So I think there's some things that are universal. So like truthfulness, integrity, yep, openness, you know, things like that. But I think also that in a church environment, pastors need to really kind of be a student of their body and understand what are people in your congregation viewing as meaningful community. Is it, you know, maybe it's like a love language conversation. Is it quality time? Is it gifts? Is it, you know, what is it?
It's good.
But obviously when you understand that, you can kind of fold that into your online interactions.
Yeah. I love it.
We talk a lot, man. I feel like I'm saying this all the time, like put out valuable content, you know, it has to be meaningful. It has to be valuable. That's the idea there.
Absolutely.
And to hear Facebook saying, yes, this is what leads to meaningful engagement, that's, I think, really important.
Yep.
Six is very similar, but I think different enough that I wanted to record it as a separate tip. So tip number six is fulfill a need. And this is where concept meets action. And that's why I think it's a separate one. What is the need? In fact, when I was at Facebook in Austin, so we went to Menlo Park, then we went to the Austin office the next week. And this was awesome. And I hope this encourages everybody listening. I showed up at 7 a.m. and we had breakfast and we attended a Christians at Facebook evangelism training. So here I am in a conference room in Facebook being trained on how to identify and meet needs of your coworkers and just pray with them.
Yep.
And we heard testimony after testimony of like people that, you know, like all across the spectrum, Buddhists, LGBTQ employees, you know, like all shapes and sizes. 100% of the people that were asked, if can I pray for you for that need, 100% of the people said yes.
Wow.
And I think that was really encouraging to me, not only that this conversation is happening, but that that type of respect and traction is being gained with prayer. But like, how much more should that be true for our church communities? You know, like, we are here to serve and to meet the needs. So this can be done through social media as well. It's like, I'm rambling now, but
one more. And I'll add to that too, with Community Bible Church, when we launched our online church Facebook page and had it really, I mean, I think we grew to 300,000 before we even ran an ad. You know, it was all right. Kind of viral nature of early days of Facebook. Our number one post every week was, how can we pray for you?
Oh, that's awesome.
And in just the comments, I mean, people sharing their prayer requests, people responding to those prayer requests. And honestly, as a pastor, I had to do very little other than ask a question, and the community jumped in around prayer. It was powerful every single week, most viral engaged post.
I think also, not to minimize prayer in any way, I've spent, you know, a lot of time talking about prayer. I think also there's an opportunity to meet real tangible needs. Probably said that completely wrong because I've received prayer for all sorts of things that are real and tangible.
Yes.
But just give me some grace here. Go with me. Like, if somebody needs a place to stay, or I've got, you know, car repairs or whatever the needs might be, this is a great opportunity for the community to meet that need as well. And as a leader, you should be identifying that and calling it out. So
It is an interesting opportunity for benevolence, essentially, within the church, in that it kind of goes back to that Acts 2 of instead of it basically go to the pastor and he'll write you a check and meet your need, it's just go to the community, go to the congregation, and let's together, you know, like, let's share our needs. So whether that the need might be prayer, and probably will always include prayer, or the need might be you might need a $50 grocery gift certificate to get you through this week. And a beautiful opportunity on through social media to meet those needs collectively.
For sure. Here's what I'm thinking at this point. I'm like, oh my gosh, we've got prayer needs. We've got physical needs. I got to learn about how to build community. This is going to take a lot of time. I got other stuff to do throughout my week. So tip number seven, get a team in place. And this is where I cannot emphasize this enough. And I think the real thinking behind this is that from a church standpoint, here's a bonus, 7B. It has to be a two-way conversation. You know, like, Facebook is looking for meaningful engagement. That means it's coming from both sides. This is not just another avenue to like disseminate information. This is true engagement. And so getting a team in place is going to help make that engagement happen. Find people that you trust, do training if you need to. This is not a pass it off to some kid because all the kids know how to use Facebook. You know, this is like, let's be intentional and get a team who is really pastoral and caring and willing to invest in this, engaging your community throughout the week.
If you were to put a percentage, and I don't know if you can, of how much percentage of your resources, and I'm including time and volunteers and staffing and, you know, financial into social media and into Facebook in particular, could you put a percentage to that? If you think of a church of 100, should the pastor put 20% of his time, and should he dedicate, you know, how do you manage that? Is there a good balance there? Because you'll often say we give 10% to missions. We give a certain amount to different aspects. Can you designate that, or how do you see that?
So here's my first thought is that from a leadership perspective, the pastor has to be involved some percentage of the time. Yes. The pastor also should probably not be involved 100% of the time.
Yes.
If this is the pastor's microphone throughout the week, now your tendency is to just get a guy who's preaching a sermon through social media snippets all week long. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is when you have a team in place, not only are you going to encourage your congregation, but you're going to encourage the team that you've given kind of ownership of this engaging our community just by being active and just by showing up. I think that's the nature of being a leader, yep, is that by being present, you put your stamp of approval on it. Mm-hmm. So for the pastor, Church of 100 is a great example because you've got, it's like a one-man show, yeah, a little bit, you know. You got a lot going on. I would think about how can, if social media is a platform, and it's not just a conversation, it's a facilitation. How can the other things that I want to accomplish that aren't currently happening through Facebook, how can I fold those into this? Yep. And I think there's a lot of overlap there. Like our next tip actually. But I want to answer your question directly. Like as a percentage, I think it really depends. Do you have a team or not? If you put a team in place, a pastor's personal time should probably be 20 or less. If you don't have a team, I'm thinking about how can I get those other things that I'm doing and accomplish them through Facebook, maybe more efficiently. Mm-hmm. Because they have done a really good job building a platform that is all encompassing.
Yep.
Including giving, they're doing donations and everything now. Like I was just running through a list. It's everything.
Totally. I mean, in my mind, even from a lead pastor standpoint, I can see a lead pastor effectively designating a minimum of 10% of their time and a maximum of 25% of their time to social media. And I think you budget your time like you budget anything else in your calendar and say, I'm not going to spend more than this much time and I'm not going to spend less than this much time. But I need to be present in this space. I need to be listening in this space. I need to be ministering in this space.
Yeah.
But I also have other spaces I need to be present. I need to go to hospitals and I need to do other ministerial things to lead our congregation effectively. But I think we're in a season now where this isn't just hand this off to the 18-year-old kid who has a smartphone. It's everyone needs to be involved and engaged to a certain extent for it to be successful.
Yeah, I agree. So tip number 8 is take it offline. And this is where, you know, Facebook has done a great job building tools, especially if you've got a church page matched with a group. You can do a lot there, including scheduling and promoting events, offline events. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we're seeing is that whenever people are like, the big question is always like, what is meaningful engagement? If Facebook defines their mission as we want to create communities around meaningful engagement, if I'm visiting a page, I'm liking the page, I'm following those posts, I'm commenting on it, I'm getting responses back from my church, I get involved in the group, I'm active there, and then I'm showing up at offline events, like that's pretty meaningful engagement. And from a church management or like calendar standpoint, you know, facilitating events, if that's where you're building your community, this is a great way to message people and say, hey, we've got the, you know, the church picnic coming up this weekend or whatever. And you can get RSVPs. If you haven't used events through your page or through your group, you should. I think it's a great tool.
It's crazy, Nick, and I'm eager to hear the rest of the list. But when you start going through the features of Facebook, you really don't need anything else. I mean, you can take donations. You can do groups. You can do live streaming. You can watch on-demand videos. You can message people with Messenger bots. You can do, you know, there are so many things you can do. And so many features people either aren't yet aware of or aren't nearly maximizing.
It's
incredible.
It was a great couple of weeks. We're talking with all sorts of people at all different jobs and levels. We signed a non-disclosure agreement. So my badge said NDA, which was awesome because you get into like great conversations, but it also means you can't talk about some of what you talked about.
Yeah.
But I think this is safe. One thing I heard consistently when we were talking about products that have been released or things or features that might be coming, I'm always hearing this trend of they're watching the data. They're understanding like what are people already doing or trying to do where it's maybe not as smooth as it should be, or it gets blocked for whatever reason. Yep. A lot of these features like scheduling an event, like giving donations, all of that stuff is, it's not just somebody with a roadmap saying, oh, this is how we've built it out the next several years. They're saying people are trying to do this and they can't do it well. So let's build that into it.
Yeah.
And if the mission is meaningful engagement, the tools that they're offering are done in a way to create more meaningful engagement. Yep. So I think that's just a good kind of principle to keep in mind. We kind of get concerned about like, am I giving too much away if I use all these? I would flip that around and say, you know, you're going to get greater engagement. You're going to help accomplish your own goals if you use some of these tools.
Yep.
Number nine, and I think here the next two really apply to Facebook groups, which I continue to be a huge fan of Facebook groups because, you know, Nona had this great line, a Facebook page is like your front porch, yep. Facebook groups are like your kitchen.
Yep.
So like, you know, you can stand on the front porch, you can see people come in and going, you know, it's outside the kitchen when you have people over. We met some people on Facebook that are planning or moving to Oregon to work in a church. A friend of mine tagged me in a comment last week when they were asking, hey, anybody in the Dallas area where we can spend the night? And he tagged me. My response was, sure, come on over. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about him. We got five kids. They roll into our house. They got six kids. It was a party at our house last night. And this morning, I'm cooking breakfast. And for like 2 hours, everybody's just standing around in the kitchen.
That's awesome.
It was meaningful engagement. The kids were chatting. We were talking. It was a great time.
That's awesome.
Facebook group is your kitchen. So yeah. Create that environment. And part of creating that environment is tip number nine. Have rules. So like, It's okay to say, this is what this group is for. This is why we're here. This is what we will allow. This is what we won't allow. That's a common practice. If you're not in other groups, that's okay to do. If you are in other groups, you probably see a post that's pinned to the top or like the group description. It says, this is what we're here for. This is why we're doing this. It's okay to do that in a church context as well. Like this is a family conversation, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes. I remember asking Nona this when we interviewed her of does a group make church feel exclusive? Because don't we want to be inclusive and some of these functions of creating rules within the group? Doesn't that feel like elementary? And I think her response was so beautiful. No, it creates safety. It really, for the end of the day, when you want to move into a more intimate relationship, rules and processes a bit add security to your comfort level in that environment. So just like when you go to a physical church, sometimes you have security around the building. You have intentional thoughts of how can you make this the most comfortable place possible and providing those kind of community rules that kind of here's our terms of engagement that isn't to exclude anybody. It's really to add safety for that community to be healthy.
So what do you do in your church, Nils, if somebody is violating your safety protocols?
You know, we had a process at CBC. We adapted our process because we moved to a much more stringent policy. But we typically said the first strike, you get a private message. We delete it and we send you a private message. The second strike, you know, you get a warning that if it happens again, that you'll be removed. And then the third strike, you're removed from the page and banned from being able to interact again in the future. So that was our protocol at CBC when we had people that were going outside of our rules of engagement. Now we didn't post our rules of engagement. We didn't really communicate that. We did it privately. So that's where when something would happen, we'd communicate to them privately. But I think it's healthy to even communicate those things publicly, especially, and we were doing this, we were using our page like we would recommend somebody use a group. And so I think a group really creates more opportunity for intimacy and rules of engagement that's more like in your kitchen. You invite somebody into your home, you expect them to behave differently than if they're driving past your house.
Right.
And you just different expectations.
Well, and you would expect or be expected to enforce it as well. And that's tip number 10 is like kick people out when they violate the rules.
Yes.
I think your protocol is perfect. Like private message, give a warning. So, you know, let's assume good intent and that type of thing. But if I'm like repeatedly violating a group's rules, I should be kicked out.
Yeah.
And that's a culture thing. And I think as a leader, whether you have a team moderating a group or the pastor is the one doing it, those leaders are responsible for the culture that is within that group and within your church ultimately.
Yep.
So let's celebrate the things that we want to see more of. Let's penalize the things that we don't want to see more of. And it's okay to kick people out.
So, well, and if we could just talk about that for a minute, Nick, that sounds countercultural to, and as it may countercultural is maybe not the right word, but counter to what the church is of being an inclusive environment. Why do we kick people? Now, we do it in our physical churches too. We had security when I was a community Bible church, and there were people that were, you know, were not allowed onto our property because of their behavior. That created a lot of tensions when we had to make those decisions. How do you navigate that? Because it doesn't, Christ-like behavior seems to be inclusive, not exclusive. Yeah. What's your opinion there?
So yeah, it is my opinion, and I'm sure others would have different ones. But look, I'm a fan of like say what you mean. Like it's just exhausting to like say one thing and do another, or to use like weasel words, you know, where I'm just like sprinkling all sorts of extra words on what I'm really trying to say. Just say what you mean.
Yep.
And I think that this is a great opportunity for, you know, hey, Nils, you are repeatedly posting stuff in this group that some people are finding offensive. You're disrupting the community. This is not a place for that. And that's not the culture that we want. Yep. I'm going to have to ask you to stop. And if you don't stop, I'm going to kick you out. And then I have to follow through.
Yes.
To maintain consistency. I think you just navigate it straight on. Doing so in a way, so passive aggressive behavior is where all these problems I think tend to get magnified.
Yep.
I'm a fan of just like the straight hard cut. Get a sharp knife, make one cut. You know?
and to support that, that's what we moved to at Community Bible Church of. Honestly, we grew so much that when we try to ease people and work people through a process, when I say we had a troublemaker,
yeah.
You know, a troll that kind of jumped into things, we were wasting our time trying to navigate a relationship with them. Now, we would immediately ban them, is what we moved to, is just immediately banning them and privately having a conversation with them. I don't know that there was one that was ever productive. We always tried to have some kind of private interaction with them.
Yeah.
But we kind of moved away from second chances, at least within the public community. We thought if we could have a healthy private conversation, maybe we could move it back in and remove the ban. But it never in probably 3-4 years of having dozens of haters, never once did we bring it back in, and it really probably saved us a lot of energy and prevented a lot of other tensions from arising.
So here's one other thought on that, and really kind of more from a leadership perspective. So I had somebody on our team this week say, hey, this is happening to me behind the scenes. I'm getting, you know, a lot of negativity, bad feedback. This person is kind of flaming me. Yeah. And like, what do I do about it? And we just talked through that. And I think it applies here for a pastor who has a team that's moderating. And so I think your team is going to be much more hesitant to like make hard cuts than maybe the leader is going to be.
Yeah.
Cause I think pastors, lead pastors, executive pastors have more clarity of vision. Maybe I think the vision might be clear to your team, but executing on it is a different thing. Yeah. And so I would really encourage moderators of a group in the same way that I encouraged our staff here. And I said, we never know what's going on in people's lives.
Yeah.
If people are like taking stuff out on us, it's just unreasonable. Now let's look at the log in my own eye first. And as the Bible says, like remove the log from my eye so that I can help you with your speck. If there's something that I've been doing that's genuinely wrong or inconsistent, I need to acknowledge that. But if that's not the case, what I see a lot on social media is people are just lashing out and you don't know why. But today it's you. And today, if it's you, tomorrow it's going to be somebody else. Yeah. So still make the hard cut.
Yeah.
Be clear about why you're doing it and just trust in the fact that the Lord will handle your reputation. And that person's probably going to move on to some other victim, you know, in a very short amount of time. So
yep.
I wouldn't lose any sleep over it.
Well, that's good advice, Nick. I'm going to cut you off at 10, and we are going to continue this conversation in next week's episode of the podcast, because I think there's so much learning here. And so next week you'll hear numbers 11 through 20 and what Nick learned from Facebook. Nick, as we wrap up this podcast, any final thoughts from the first 10 aspects of what you learned at Facebook?
Summation is build meaningful community. Just be intentional about building community. And I will say it again, Facebook groups is a great way to do that.
Yeah, I love it. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of the podcast. Remember, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so that you'll be the first to listen to the next 11 through 12 aspects of what Nick learned from Facebook. Thanks for listening. If you would review the podcast on iTunes or wherever it is that you're listening, it would mean the world to us. Thanks again for listening.